no amount of liquidity from the Fed's going to save that. What we really need, frankly, is for post the crisis, a strong fiscal response. Is that the Bible basically says life is a set of tests. And the question is whether or not we pass those tests or not. And now is a test for people. And I think the question is, do we pass that test like, you know, human beings? Or do we, you know, look like, do we look like people who we wouldn't admire? Let me put it that way. Well, tests are about moving people out of their comfort zone. I mean, and I, you know, as I said, I think that's the Bible, I think, says life is a test. And if it's all easy, it's not a test.
With the COVID-19 virus crisis and the number of casualties with the flu, if you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your immunities by now, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense, and for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight viruses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe as long as you are taking high-quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exists. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. Fourth, as Dr. Chu Lee stated on a previous show, COVID-19 creates massive amounts of free radicals, which is causing organ failure for those with weaker immune systems. So now it becomes clear you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Why black seed oil and curcumin? Because these two ingredients are the absolute best at supporting C60 to fight viruses and to improve your immune system. Go to sarahwestall.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful for building your immunities. And it's now available in gel capsules and by diffuser for more serious needs. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use a current coupon to save money when you buy. Patrons also receive a 10% discount. You can find that code at patreon.com/sarahwestall. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do.
But I got to ask you, because you worked, just in Wikipedia, it says that your bank was Donald Trump's go-to bank. So do you know him well? And what kind of relationship did you have with him?
Well, it's funny you say that, because it just shows you can't read everything, but you believe in everything in the media. The New York Times, I don't think I'm giving out any state secrets, doesn't like Donald Trump.
Really?
And they wrote an article. Yeah. And they wrote an article. And the truth of the matter is, and we publish this on our website, is that the Trump Organization, like many organizations in New York, both blue and red, have accounts with us. They subsequently issued a correction because we issued two letters of credit secured 100% by cash in his account, which we would do for anybody who's a depositor, for two subcontractors on one of his golf courses. We actually didn't take any credit risk, we don't have a substantial relationship and the Trump Organization said the same thing. We actually don't have a substantial relationship. They are depositors. We can normally I couldn't acknowledge that, except they acknowledged it, and it's pretty public. It was mostly a made up article. Ivanka Trump served on our board, and I do know Ivanka because she served on our board for about 18 months. She was a great director, paid a lot of attention, asked great questions, did her homework, and ultimately she decided to step down because she was having, I believe, her third child at the time and said it was just too much. So she did. Ivanka did serve on our board. And Ivanka was just, you know, again, a really smart, really constructive and positive board member. But that still doesn't relate to us having a strong, I don't even know, I don't even know offhand if that overlapped when we had deposit relationships with the Trump organization,
That's
to be perfectly
fair.
honest. I kept the check, but.
They can make stuff up for everything. You can, you know, when the poor politicians have to stand there in line and get 500 pictures taken, and you don't even know half the people are majority of the people who took the picture, and then they show that picture with you and that person. And the next thing you know, when you're really, and the average person doesn't understand that those are just mass picture opportunities, and so they can do take anything out of context. And I know your relationship with them isn't quite like that, but I'm just saying they can do anything with anything when it comes to the media. And so it was good that I asked, because when Wikipedia has it, a lot of people don't trust Wikipedia, and this is a good example of why.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they led with the article, with the lead in the article in the New York Times was Michael Cohen came to us and we lent him $17 million or something. And it's like, we never did that. He's not even a client. And I can say that publicly. The Michael Cohen, at least, that, you know, the famous Michael Cohen, we probably have a lot of other Michael Cohens who are clients, but we don't even have a relationship with him. But he was a investor in a property. And he was one of the investors. He owned 19% of this multifamily project, and we lent money to the actual developer. So, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think we're spending more time on this, but the article is primarily connecting dots and making stuff up.
Well, I just thought it was interesting. I think it's a piece of a lot of my listeners really like Donald Trump. They are supportive. So they would love to hear that. And so that's why I ask you. But that being said, your bank is highly
Yes.
regarded. It's won so many awards. It's just being an ethical, good customer service, something that stands in the community as just good faith, which I love. Everything I read about that, I was really impressed, because that's the kind of media, that's who I like to work for. That's what I like to be. And so when you said that you were doing this book on ethics, actually the name of it, why don't you talk about your book? Talk about what the name of it is, and
sure.
It's spirituality, and, you know, talk about it.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. Because I spent 5 years. So most bankers don't write books about faith. But people know I'm a believer. And so I get questions. I was getting questions from people, clients and the like. Normally I'm wearing a suit today. I'm in my casual outfit. I'm doing book tour. But normally I'm meeting with clients. I'm talking to them and they'd say, you know, I just read Christopher Hitchens, Why God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything. Or I just read Richard Dawkins, you know, The God Delusion. Or I read Sam Harris's Letter to a Christian Nation, which is pretty negative. Or I read Yuval Harari, or I read, you know, really, or Steven Pinker. I read all these atheists, and I'm starting to wonder if God isn't just Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. And I was stunned that I'm having these conversations, because again, I'm a banker. I take it very seriously. I consider faith issues really, really important to me. So I went looking for a book that I could recommend. And there really aren't a lot of good books to recommend other than The Good Book. And I sat down and I started writing, and it took me 5 years of literally, I used to be a bicyclist. I used to do a lot of stuff that I gave up, and I became totally obsessively focused on writing this book. Because I thought there needed to be a book that explained why it's rational to believe in God, with all we know about science, all we know about the historicity of the Bible, and our modern sense of morality. Because people would say to me, you know, Richard Dawkins famously said, you know, he said the Bible is the most xenophobic, I'm going to get it about right, xenophobic, homophobic, racist, sexist, pro-rape, pro-slavery, screed ever written. And that's just false. So I wanted to write a book that explained, you know, the bad parts of the Bible, the difficult parts of the Bible. I wanted to explain what the Bible came to do. And it had a very importance. So the Bible had a very important mission, and I wanted to explain all the things to people. Why is there evil in this world if we believe in an all-good God? How do we grapple with, you know, people who criticize the Bible and say it was all made up by some sheep herders with too much time on their hands, or some returning priests from Babylon? And I also wanted to, I really, really, and it's the final section of the book, is explain from my perspective, and it's been a big journey for me, what prayer is all about. You know, how can we as finite beings pray to an almighty God and expect that that's not something God has anticipated before, that we can somehow change God's mind? And so I wanted to do this. I wanted to put it in one place. I wanted to have a response to these major, you know, evangelical atheists. And it's been an important part of my life journey. And it's been really well received. The book is done very, you know, has done pretty well. It's on, it's hardcover. It's going to be coming out in softcover. It has a Audible edition, which has been really, really well. It's been very popular, read by someone named Andrew Totless, who some of your listeners may know. He's got a great voice, much better than mine. So you can listen to it for a lot longer. And I really think it's made an impact on people. I mean, that's the most gratifying thing, is that I really worry about a civilization, about our country, where God leaves the picture. Because I gave a talk. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of these Google, you know, talks at Google, Google Book Talks. So I gave one of these. And so most of the folks there are millennials and Gen Zers. And I got so many questions, both on camera and off about, well, why do we need God anymore? Isn't reason enough? And the answer is no. The answer is, you know, I gave one example there, and I can give a gazillion examples. But, you know, so someone asked, you know, well, isn't Kant or isn't utilitarianism or moral deontology, all of these sort of atheist philosophies, good enough? And I said, no, you've got Peter Singer. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's the leading moral philosopher among atheists.
Yes,
he
I
says,
do.
But you know what? You know what? If a child is born and you later discover that that child has a disability, you should euthanize that child. You commit infanticide, because it will cost society a lot of money, and it'll cost so much money that it'll take resources from the rest of society. So it's not utilitarian. It's not the greatest good for the greatest number. And so just euthanize the child.
I am not
a fan. Richard Dawkins agrees.
I am not a fan of
his. Well, let me.
Go ahead.
Well,
you want to get my blood boiling. You talk about some of the things he said.
I talked to one medical director of a major. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just, I'm not usually the type of person that gets angry and stuff. It just, when it comes to afterbirth abortions, you know, this whole aborting a baby after it's born, he's one of the people in the forefront of that ethics movement. And I think it's as far away from ethics as it can be. It's just fundamentally wrong. And it's because we don't, what's flawed about his rational thinking is he doesn't understand what God is and the bigger, how that fits into the bigger picture. So his ethics framework is missing major components of what we mean and what the universe and what God means. And so he doesn't get it. And so he's making decisions based on having half an understanding of life. But go ahead.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because it's not that he doesn't understand God, but whenever you go deep into these moral philosophies, you realize that somebody does have to play God. I mean, in a certain kind of way, Peter Singer wants to play God. Well, what actually is the level of disability where you euthanize it, where you commit infanticide or commit, you know, euthanize a child, you know, who decides that? Well, that person is essentially playing God. And there's a real danger when people play God. So there's one thing, a broader point that I'd like to raise for you and your listeners, because I think this, will explain it even better. So the Bible came at this time when the whole world was idolatrous. And we think, you know, we moderns have lost track of what idolatry is and what monotheism is. Idolatry, we think it's just, you know, bowing down to some statues and some Wiccan chants. But actually, idolatry is not that. It's much worse. It's a set of lies about power. It's about ascribing superpowers or super authority to finite beings, like people like you, me, Peter Singer, or ideologies, or natural processes, or in the ancient world, animals. Not so much anymore. So we thought, you know, well, we licked the god king Pharaoh 3,400 years ago. But in reality, how did Stalin, Mao, Hitler, Pol Pot, the Assad family, the Kim family, and I could go on and on, how did they commit the atrocities that they did? Because they used the same poetry, pageantry, lies, and myth, all backed up, of course, by strong armies and networks of secret informers. So how did we'll put him aside for a moment. My father's a Holocaust survivor. We can talk a lot about that. Let's just talk about Stalin for a second. How did Stalin kill a quarter of the Ukraine by starvation, maybe 8 to 10 million people? Kill all the kulaks, another 1 or 2 million people. Send tens of millions to the gulag. And nobody said no. They said, yes, Mr. Chairman Stalin. You know, because he had super authority. He was the god king of the ideology communism. Mao caused the death of 75 million of his comrade Chinese. And nobody ever said no because he had super authority. And he played God. If Stalin gave you, you know, he famously wrote lists of people to be assassinated, and they were. And so anytime someone takes on that mantle of God King on a macro basis or on a basis like Peter Singer or Richard Dawkins, that's when the horrors happen. And if I could even relate that, you know, that's on a macro basis, but on a micro basis, what I think people don't get is that how did Harvey Weinstein and Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and Kevin Spacey and all of those folks get away with being able to abuse mostly women, but some men too? Because they made themselves idols in their industry. They were like gods. They could do what they wanted to at their whim. So if Harvey Weinstein wanted you to get a job, get cast as an actress or an actor, you did. If he didn't, you didn't. It was just like the pantheon of the Greek gods. And so it's not only on a macro level, it's on a micro level. And the power of the Bible is, and the power of us as individuals and why everything is a test, is idols can be toppled, but it's not so easy, and it's a great risk. I mean, Moses, he ended up being 40 years in Midian in the wilderness. He never knew he was coming back. So you always are taking those personal risks, and it requires personal courage. But idols can be toppled if we believe in, you know, the Almighty, if we believe in monotheism, if we believe that there's someone listening to our prayers.
I love this conversation. This is really great. And I think one of the things that you can really set an example for people, because people think that bankers are evil in today's world because they've seen so many, they've been abused by people, right? There's been a lot of abuse in our system and by bankers and by people in general. And I think having someone like you, it's not we need banks. We need that function in society, but it doesn't mean that you're all evil. And I think having you come forward and you talking about this and talking about how to behave and how to think about things, and not like telling people to behave, but helping them think through things and setting an example is really something that people need. So I just applaud you for doing that. I think it's really great, and we really need this right now. There's, you know, we have kids. The suicide rate amongst kids has doubled. Their anxiety rate is through the roof. we have some serious issues in our society. So what we need is leadership like you, without thinking of this being an idol. If that's not what it's about, it's about servant leadership. And
right,
you know, servant leadership. And,
yes.
And you just yes. articulated that very well.
Well, I think, you know, look, there's two ways of looking at your, you know, your life. And that's why I think everything is a test. There's the way of looking at yourself as though, you know what, I'm out to have the most fun, get the most whatever, have the most power, money. And then there's another way of looking at yourself and saying, you know what, I'm a servant of God. I was my, you know, there's two main points in your life. One you have no control over, which is when you're born. And the second is when you figure out why you're here on earth and what you're supposed to do. And that you have to work on yourself. And that's the second most important time. And sadly, many people go through their entire life not figuring out what they were here to do, what their purpose on the planet was. It's different for everybody. Some have big roles, some have little roles. But, you know, I personally believe we all have some role. And I think that's what the Bible says. You know, the whole book, I mentioned the book of Kings before. The whole book of Kings, if you read it, basically says the kings were pretty dumb by and large. Even Solomon, he thought he was really smart, but he ended up being pretty dumb too in the end. The only people that look smart are sort of like the people who end up being advisors, the people who end up being, you know, sort of the ordinary people who make, you know, there's a couple points that a wise woman is referenced, and they're usually pretty wise. You know, a woman who sees Elisha and makes a room for him because she wonders why he's wandering by himself for Elijah. And should I say not Elisha? And Elisha, too, actually. It happens for him, too, where someone sets a room for him. It's about those acts of figuring out, okay, here's an opportunity to do good. And, you know, that's really, it's a life changer when you think of life that way. That doesn't mean you're not still supposed to make a living. You're not still supposed to, you know, have a good time. I mean, you know, we're supposed to enjoy life too. But if you have that view that there is an almighty, it's not all about what's relative. There's an absolute. Then it really changes your whole life. And, you know, that's part of what made me write the book. I felt like I had to do this.
Don't you think joy makes it so much easier to do what you're talking about? So having joy and bringing joy into your life, which is having a good time, makes it so much easier to live a life like you're talking about, at least for me. So that's my way of looking at it, is I like to enjoy my life so that I can bring that back for other people. But, you know, with us, we're right on the precipice of dealing with some really seriously hard times, right? Something that I've never lived through this. No one I know has ever lived through what we're about ready to, or what we're dealing with right now. How would you, you know, in closing this interview, how would you say, based on your five-year journey and everything you've done, what kind of advice would you give people right now with what's going on?
Don't despair and don't panic. Look around and don't depend on what, in all candor, you know, don't just listen to someone, even us, you know, figure it out for yourself. Because a lot of people on television have, you know, their own ways of looking at things, maybe their own perspectives, maybe their own agendas. Look around. Figure out what makes sense. That means doing the work. You know, the bad part of, or the hard part about this is you have to think for yourself. And I would ask people to think for themselves. And that, of course, means being cautious. But think for yourself and don't panic. Whenever there's in the Bible, whenever people panic, bad stuff happens, you know. When Moses didn't make it down quite on the 40th day because the people miscalculated and they built the golden calf, because if they would have waited another day, it would have been all okay. That was a panic. I mean, when the people trampled and, you know, in Kings, there's so many. I mean, look, Joseph could have just panicked when he saw 7 years of famine, or Esther, could have just panicked when, and Mordechai could have panicked when they learned that all the Jews were going to be killed by Haman and Ahasuerus. They didn't. They came up with a plan. And my strong advice to people is take a deep breath. Don't just buy into, you know, panic. You're going to need to prepare. I mean, you're going to need to deal with what happens if you know, schools and offices and subways are shut down. You're going to need to plan for that. But don't panic. Smile at the next person. Don't view them as a potential infectious agent. They're people just like you, and you would like to be smiled at too. And you know, and I think if we do that, we'll all get through this. And please God, to a better day.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Where can they get a copy of your book? I think it's such a timely thing that you've done.
So first of all, it's scottshay.com, two T's, S-H-A-Y, .com. You can listen to all of the talks I've given. You can listen to some of them, well, not all of them, but you can listen to some of them, like the Google Book Talk, my debate with Michael Shermer, the Cashless Society articles, all sorts of stuff. You can link there to buy the book on Amazon. My book is also available at many independent, at many bookstores, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores. It's on Kindle. It's on Audible Books. Please buy it. I wrote this for 5 years because I wanted people to read it. So I'm grateful for everybody who takes the time to do that. And I'm humbled to be doing this. I'm so glad that this journey has come to this place. And oh, also one other thing, there's a number of churches and synagogues that are actually reading the book in a book club mode. And there's, you can download for free a set of discussion materials and actually you can download that for free. It's sort of a summary of the book in a way, but you can download that for free on the site as well.
Well, thank you so much. This was kind of a refreshing talk. It was different than I usually do, so I really appreciate it. We're going to have you come back at some point.
It would be a pleasure, Sarah. It was really nice to have this afternoon chat.